Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. It's Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. He joins me from San Diego. I'm in Toronto. Just, you know, honestly, at this point, just happy that the Philadelphia series ended. That's all. I that was in doubt at some point. I knew it would end, but like, you know, I wondered really, would it ever really end? The longest three-game series that I have experienced through any rainouts or anything like that, that was just a long three-game series. Ryan, I know you watched a lot of it. You're always there to help me out. What did you think?
Yeah, four-game series. Four games in 3 days.
Oh, this three-day series of my life. Four-game series, yes. Longest three-day series.
First of all, Kevin, I'm so glad to see that your computer is functioning. This is for those who don't follow, Kevin touched on this a little bit in his newsletter, adding to the rain delays and the extra innings and the poor execution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, was a technical issue that led you to do one of your newsletters from your phone, which is Kirk Gibson launching a home run into the October sky level of heroism from you, which is very cool.
Well, thank you. But yeah.
I'm glad that you're sane after that weekend and that you're ready to go here into Toronto. Hey, Kevin, when the story of this season is written, we may talk about this being the weekend where everything sort of became clearer. This is a team that played great on Friday, blew leads late twice on Saturday, and couldn't drive in a run in the extra innings on Sunday. To me, it's their season in a nutshell. I don't know what you think, Kevin.
I think that's fair. It really is. I think that it's sort of surreal and kind of, you know, it's just as unbelievable as it is that they're here. And it's all these arguments you can make that are real about how whatever close they are or that they still have the ability to go on a run. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. But here they are. And the way that it went down in Philadelphia is kind of, I believe, the story of the season so far. You know, a team that was close and just was never able to do it. And they faced a team that has a really deep lineup. And I do want to go over some of the decisions that were made, some of the things that happened, but it comes back to, you know, Bryce Harper came through. Look, Manny Machado had two hits. They were both home runs. He could have been remembered as having the game winner in one of the games, but you know, they blew that, not him, but they, you know, the bullpen, they blew that, but it was 2 out of 11. And it continued a season long, you know, effort by him, by Xander Bogaerts, who was better. We could talk about that as well, but like the Phillies just got hits when they needed to, and the Padres didn't. They're 0-9 in extra innings. They have lost more games by one or two runs than any team in the majors. This is their season.
Yeah, Kevin, when we talk about decision-making, I guess I go to Saturday's first game and Blake Snell. You know, he was dealing as he has dealt for most of the season, cruising along, but it's hot. He's thrown a lot of pitches. What was the word used afterwards by Bob Melvin? Was it gassed?
Cooked.
Cooked. They go to a bullpen that is the second worst in baseball over the last month in terms of war, a bullpen that has gone from the strength of this team to a really big question mark. There are those who will argue that that cost them the game. What was Bob Melvin's logic on that, and what did Blake Snell say about it?
His logic was that Blake Snell was cooked. I think Blake balked at that word, or I know Blake balked at that word, but I think it was specifically at that word. Blake had gone in not feeling great and – you know, kind of thought he was going to be around that 75, 80 pitches. And he had a really long fifth inning and that was it. If it wasn't the first question, it was really high up there on the questions for Bob Melvin after the game. It happens, right? Like, yeah, Blake Snell will take a 21 inning scoreless streak into his start here on Thursday.
Wow.
But you know, I do think it contributed to them losing for sure, because it creates then longer day for the bullpen. But the fact is, so Steven Wilson comes in. Steven Wilson, who you can basically tie his injured list stint, the start of it, to the start of the bullpen cratering. He comes in, and Juan Soto, who had a horrendous series in left field, contributes to this wasn't the ball that went off the glove, but this was a ball that Juan Soto like thought he had and wasn't really running after and then had to sprint, and it went over his head for a double by Brandon Marsh, leads to runs. And then in comes, is it after that was Martinez or Hill, another home run by Martinez given up. And there you go. Manny, is that the one where he hit the home run? It looked like they were going to win that game. All right, now they're going to be up two.
Saturday's first game. Yeah.
So, and then it's like one thing. I don't want to say one thing leads to another, but it's like we can blame it on the bullpen for sure. But then there's other times where the offense doesn't come back or doesn't add on to a lead. Or then there's like the 10th inning. When I'm talking about decision-making, if you don't mind if I go there, I've heard a lot about how Bob Melvin should have walked people in extra innings. Well, it works against the Padres. It's worked a few times in extra innings against the Padres because Matt Carpenter was coming up or, you know, whatever. It was, depending where you were in the lineup, it worked. And I saw that argument put out there. So you walk Bryce Harper in the 10th inning. First of all, that's Josh Hader on the mound, who's allowed three hits to left-handers. Now, it's a left-hander that's named Bryce Harper. Fine. You walk him, you're bringing up JT Realmuto with the winning run on second base, not the tying run. Now, it's the winning run, okay? Mm-hmm. The Phillies have two players with an OPS plus under 111. And one of those is Trey Turner, who started out terribly poor and now is playing like Trey Turner.
Right.
Do you walk Kyle Schwarber, who ends up hitting the sacrifice fly to try to set up the double play in the 12th inning? Okay. Trey Turner's coming up, who's hitting the one double play this season. Mm-hmm. We all think we know right, left. We all think we know, oh, this is the situation you walk somebody to set up a double play. What we don't have at our disposal, like readily, like Bob Melvin or Ryan Christensen in that point, whatever is happening in the dugout, is all this information that they're aware of. And I emailed this back to a person yesterday who said that Bob Melvin cost them the game. And I said, their top players being unable to produce more runs in extra innings cost them the game. That's fact.
Yeah.
Bob Melvin's decisions theoretically may have cost them. That is conjecture. I'm not taking Bob Melvin off the hook, but it's like there are reasons that and for the love of God, score some more runs. They've scored in 5 of their 13 extra innings. And
in 5
of their 9 extra innings games, mm-hmm. at least 2 of the big 4 came up and made outs with a runner in scoring position. Okay, that included Sunday. So, like, how about if in 2 of those 5 games, one of the big 4 hit a single?
Right.
They'd be 2-7 in extra inning games. I mean, who knows where it goes from there, right? Like, yeah, go ahead.
And let's talk about, there's sort of a chain of events here, too. In you know, we talk about them winning Friday, and I think we spent 4 words on it. But, you know, they couldn't get the final 3 outs. Friday, right?
Yeah.
Because Luis Garcia can't get anybody out anymore, the Padres are going to Josh Hader in a situation where he should not under any circumstances be.
Right.
They were up a ton of runs.
They're up 5. Late. Yep.
And because the formula this year has been, if Josh Hader can get a save, Josh Hader is going to be on the mound. When they had the tying run on deck, when the Phillies had the tying run on deck, they went to Hader, right? He secures the win. Okay. That puts him down, or at least limits him going forward, right? It means that all of a sudden the next day you're dealing with that situation. And, you know, it's when your bullpen's bad, you have to make up for it by pitching your one really good guy a lot. And that affects your ability to use him going forward. You know, when we talk about Josh Hader's performance, even on Sunday, right? Giving up the game tying hit to Bryce Harper with 2 outs in the 9th, Josh Hader's thrown a little bit better on Sunday if he didn't have to clean up Luis Garcia's mess on Friday. And
yeah,
I mean, sure, ifs and buts here, but you know, it seems like even when they win, this bullpen makes it hard. And this has been a strength of the team all year, and it's not anymore.
Yes. And then you started this out by talking about it's a chain of events. How about throughout the first 3 months of the season, the bullpen, the amount of times they had to pitch in tight contests that Steven Wilson, that Tim Hill, that Nick Martinez are constantly, Luis Garcia, constantly coming in with the game on the line. So it's not just that, like, you know, Nick Martinez ranks third in appearances over a certain period of time in the major leagues. It's that Nick Martinez's 29 of his 32 appearances were with the game absolutely on the line. And that does make a difference over time. So, look, I'm not making excuses, but, like, I am like, a lot of it starts with you're supposed to be able to overcome a little bit of deficiency from your pitching. And here's the bonus you've gotten. Way better starting pitching across the board than you had any real right to count on. And you've wasted that as well.
Sure. Can we talk starting pitching for a minute?
Sure enough.
Joe Musgrove, part of this rotation. They skipped his final turn in the rotation, didn't they, in the first
He was moved, not moved up, but he pitched on 4 days rest to pitch Sunday game against the Mets. And then he has not pitched since then. So 8 days rest.
Right. And the design here was just to give him a little bit of a break based on just what a sort of physically taxing first half of the season he had.
Yes.
So he'll get the nod here. Kevin, I know you talked to him the other day. Where is he mentally and physically?
Nice. He's back to being Joe Musgrove. I mean, and he's become just such a better pitcher that with all those pitches, I remember back like in 2021, I'll write about this at some point here. In 2021, and I'm sure like in 2020 and 19 when he was, you know, first becoming a starter. But in 2021, his first year here, he would talk about how, like, you know, I didn't have my best stuff, but I was able to grind through. And that was after a start in which he went five or five and a third and gave up three or four runs. Well, this year he talks about afterward and you can see during the starts, maybe he isn't like no Joe, right? Like he doesn't have his best stuff and it's six shutout or it's six and one run. And it's like, okay, that's what aces do. And I know Joe's not an ace because there's probably 10 aces. If you want to be real about this and not live in this world where we say everything's great or the best, there's like 10 aces in the major leagues. And so he's not one of those. He keeps improving as he has over the last 3 years. And Joe Musgrove is an ace. So like, because that's what aces do. If you think that the best pitchers in the league always have their best stuff, they don't. They go throw six shutout when they don't have their best stuff. And that's what Joe's been doing. And that's when you know that, like, okay, you know what? We can feel real good when he's on the mound. Now, interestingly tonight, faces Alec Manoah, his first start at home since he was booed off the field after making one out, giving up six runs to the Astros in the first inning, was sent down to basically the instructional league. There they worked on his mechanics. He lost weight. He's come back. He made a real nice start against the Tigers in Detroit before the break. Six innings, one run. And now this will be his first start at home. I mean, this is a guy who you thought at the beginning of the year, you'd be like, oh man, we're facing Cy Young, Alec Manoah, right? Well, now you're facing kind of an unknown, but he does appear based on his one start to have gotten things turned around.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating pitching matchup and a fascinating matchup between these two teams in general. The Blue Jays are red hot here.
Whoa.
And it's been basically without Alec Manoah. There are some players on that team. I mean, I'm not afraid to tell you, Kevin, in my previous life living in the state of Arizona, Dalton Varsho for me was appointment television. I mean, really, guy, he could catch and play center field. Now, I know he's not having a great year, but they are having a great year, even with him down.
Okay, so I'm not going to compare him to Trey Turner, but it just reminds me of what I just said. The Blue Jays also have seven of their nine most used position players, OPS above 100. Wow. One of the players who's not is Dalton Varsho. But you know that he's dangerous at the plate. Mm-hmm. It's like there is no break. Does that sound like the Padres? No. Mm-hmm. There is no break in their lineup, the Blue Jays.
Yeah, it's and that's, I mean, even in the when they were playing the Phillies, you know, I feel like I'm whining here, Kevin, but even when they were playing the Phillies, man, that's a tough lineup to have to get through. Mm-hmm. That is a tough lineup to have to get through. The Padres on paper should be every bit as good, if not better. And just the lack of performance by their big four. is, I mean, I think it's the reason why they're in this mess. And you were the first, and you were the first one to point that out, like in May.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I did feel like I was like yelling into the wind because people wanted to focus on Austin Nola and Trent Grisham. Cause I mean, I don't know why exactly that there was this reluctance to say, hey, what about Manny Machado? Like I'm Manny's biggest fan. I mean, you got to understand something. That guy's a huge pain in the ass to cover. But I will tell everyone, and sometimes other reporters look at me like I got three heads. I love covering Manny Machado. Mm-hmm. He made the team I cover better. He made the team I cover relevant. He does incredible things on the field. I could care less that he's a pain in my backside. He is awesome. Mm-hmm. But I got to hold him accountable that he has not done what he is supposed to do in 2023. And neither has Xander Bogaerts. Both of them maybe more hurt than they have wanted to let on. Bravo, whatever. Juan Soto, I have a real hard time, a guy with a 420 on base percentage, you know, discounting what he does. But where's the impact? And then especially when you have series like this in left field, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I try to take out the fact that he's making all this money and that he turned, you know, he basically put a target on his back when he turned down $440 million. Like, that's a good player, but is that like where's the impact? Mm-hmm. Fernando Tatis Jr., real hard. He's got a 136 WRC plus, I believe. You know, has played in every game since his suspension was over. It's difficult to get too down on him, but you know what? He's chasing a lot. He's swinging at everything in the zone, not just the pitches that he should be. Like, Fernando Tatis Jr. could be far better than he is playing right now. So,
and now he's hurt.
Yeah, yeah. I think he was going okay, but yeah, it's something that you got to keep an eye on here with him playing on the turf. Maybe he gets a DH day here, and but yeah, hurt his ankle on Friday night. Was it Friday night? Was it Saturday during the – it honest to God, it was – did I mention this? It was the longest three-day series I covered.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Kevin, there's been a lot out there with some of the national guys writing and speculating about whether the Padres will be buyers or sellers. I know we're only four games in the second half of the season. Has the results of that Philly series changed your opinion on what they're going to do?
Well, as if my opinion matters, and here's what I think that everyone should responsibly do. There should be like asterisk when we're writing, you know, when you're writing about the Padres and what they might do. Every one of us should have an asterisk, a disclaimer that says, honestly, have any of us ever really known what Peter Seidler and AJ Preller are going to do?
No.
All right. You hear stuff from inside the organization and these are people in the know. And it goes the opposite. And it's happened to me 1,000 times. I'm exaggerating, but it's happened a lot. I know for a fact things that these two have said to people or told people. And 3 days later, it's changed. I'm not saying they were lying at that time. I'm saying, like, you know what? They run this organization differently and they talk to fewer people. Peter Seidler and AJ Preller are not your typical baseball people. There's not a lot of talking going on. So let me just say, we don't have a freaking clue what these guys are going to do.
Right.
What have they seemed like they're going to do? Be aggressive. Mm-hmm. I think the question then is how aggressive. And then if it goes poorly, you get swept here or you lose 4 of 6 here before you get home and you've now got whatever it is, a week left before the deadline. Then do they become sellers? But I don't think at this point that they are sellers.
Right. They have if you believe the statistical projections here, they have about a 1 in 5 chance of making the playoffs. I think logic says do what you can, get guys for Hader and Snell, two players that are going to be free agents and probably aren't coming back. On the other hand, at some point you're all in, right? I mean, this is, Kevin, we've talked for months. They're all in. Hedging at this point, is that smart?
You mean for the 2023 season? I think it's smart for 23, and I think it's smart going forward. So I'm in agreement with you that, like, I'm not saying it's there yet because as down as I get on this team, because I'm the one who watches it every day, I'm the one who watches it every day and says, yes, they can go on a 32-10 run like the Phillies are on right now. They can do that. They can win 8 of 9 like the Blue Jays have right now. Okay. Mm-hmm. And how differently are you feeling if they win 8 of 9? And yeah, that's what, one more game till the trade deadline, I believe. And then that means they're a game above 500. They're probably four back in the wild card, and you're screaming, get a DH, you know. Yeah. And so they are capable of doing that. So I'm not yet saying seller for sure. But I'm with you on that. That might be the prudent thing. As a matter of fact, like, to not do so would seem to me like to hold on to Blake Snell. If you're out of it, I don't understand it at all. He's probably the best starting pitcher available.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Would they get a qualifying pick, or would they get a,
those have gone away? The way the new rules are, all they're going to get for Hader or Snell based on their luxury tax threshold, and I'm not, you know, maybe things change out because that's calculated at the end of the year if they dump those guys, but I don't think by much. As it stands right now, they get a pick after the fourth round. So it's not after the first round.
Okay.
It is virtually nothing. Could they get a great player in the fourth round? Sure. It's a huge drop off from what you would think would be available after the first round.
Sure, so, from getting somebody who's a first rounder.
Right. So that's what, when I say, you know, quote unquote, they get nothing for just letting these guys walk. That's what I mean. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's nothing. You're giving them up for zero when you could, you know, if you got the best starting pitcher and the best closer available on the market, you're in a different kind of catbird seat, right? Like, you're, yeah, right? Like, this is good for what it is. It's bad. But also remember this, if they do get rid of those guys, they're for all intents and purposes punting on 2023. But Fernando Tatis Jr. comes back next year. Manny Machado comes back. Xander Bogart. I mean, you know, Joe Musgrove is still here. Yu Darvish is still here. However you feel, like, there's a core. The Padres are not rebuilding. All right. Yep. They all absolutely once again going to be all in for 2024.
Sure. This would not be a case of them being cheap. This would be a case of them trying to be smart.
There you go.
Yeah, I agree. Kevin, Luis Campusano and Robert Suarez, two guys who are at AAA as we speak right now. What are the odds of us seeing one or both of those guys at some point in Canada?
Probably more likely Detroit.
Okay.
But certainly possible. As a matter of fact, Suarez could be. I got calls out. I haven't heard. Suarez could be, you know, coming up here real soon. So, but yeah, real quick with the catcher and the reliever who was supposed to have changed everything. And look, Robert Suarez finished last season as strong as could be after getting his knee fixed. They also brought him along quite a bit in terms of building his confidence first year in the majors. Hopefully that confidence has, you know, carried over at the big contract. And look, you can do this. And now that elbow is healthy, he hits the ground running because they absolutely need that.
Sure. Kevin, I usually put you on the spot at the end, but it seems like we've already done that a little bit with trade talk and everything else. As you can tell behind me, I'm moving in to my new home office.
Yeah.
I have a lot of stuff just kind of laying around. Can I give you just a little Padre-related show and tell?
Yes, as I always remind people, you know more about 90s Padres and early 2000 Padres than most fans.
Well, so this is even earlier. There's a black and white photo of Luke Easter of the PCL Padres.
Wow.
I got this from the San Diego Historical Society.
Wow.
It was hung in my office in my last job. I'll give you two more things. The baseball card set from when the Padres were going to Washington.
No.
So if you can see hold on, I'll go up close. Oh, maybe can I? I don't know. Hold on. You can see it says Washington up there.
Yes.
So it's a baseball card set after when they were supposed to be going to Washington. So that's the top set from that year. And this is perhaps the coolest thing I own. Hold on. This is a letter and a ticket from Montreal, and I was reminded of this because you're in Toronto today, from Montreal, from the day Tony Gwynn got his 3,000th hit.
Wow.
I actually called ahead of time. This was back pre-good internet, at least, back when the World Wide Web was a thing.
1999, right? Is that correct?
August 16th, 1999.
Okay.
I or I'm sorry, the game was August 6th.
I was going to say August 6th because, yes, it was my fifth wedding anniversary. Yes.
And there we go. August 6th, 1999. I called that morning and I said, I'm not going to go to today's game, but I would like to buy a ticket and I would like you to send it to me. And they did. And because, again, there were, 16,000 people that game. Yeah. I mean, plenty of good seats still available. My ticket cost me $7 Canadian.
Oh, that's great. About $5 at the time.
$5. But here's the best part. So when they sent it with a note. Okay. Dear sir or madam, on August 6, 1999, at Montreal's Olympic Stadium, Tony Gwynn from the San Diego Padres made history in his first plate appearance, reaching his 3,000th career hit plateau. The highlight came off right-handed pitcher Dan Smith, making Gwynn the 22nd major leaguer to reach this mark. You ordered tickets from the August 6th game, and we are pleased to send them to you, along with this letter certifying their authenticity. Signed by their ticket office director, who had the world's most French-Canadian name, Hubert Richard. My favorite, that is just the perfect little exclamation point on that letter.
Your credentials as a lifelong Padres follower, very complicated relationship you have now as a member of the media, yeah. You know, but your credentials are 100% unassailable as a lifelong Padres follower.
Yes, it's and it is a little complicated, although the Padres being a little disappointing this season feels more familiar to me. So, you know, when we can sit there and talk about teams that have disappointed and players that have disappointed, I've got a little bit of a photographic memory of that. Anyway, at some point, Kevin, I will get around to hanging all this stuff behind me, but I wanted to show you. I thought
that's magnificent. I can't wait to see that office in person. I'm sure that I'll be invited at some point.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that'll do it. I think, Kevin, this seems like a good place to jump off. Huge series. Kevin, we've been saying it for 2 months. It seems like a huge series. And it'll be fun to see if the Padres can answer the bell against a really, really good Toronto team. Kevin, Skydome, your thoughts, 20 words or less.
It's fantastic. It really is. And I'm grading it on the curve of it being in a dome, but it is fantastic.
I love that. I love that. Kevin, have fun in Toronto. And we will talk next time before the Padres series against the Detroit Tigers. That's another show, as they say. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.